Good to be with you this evening. Sobriety dates May 5th, 1987. That's because Alcoholics Anonymous works under any and all conditions. If you will and if you can. And if you can't, I'm not going to argue with you. We're here to share our own experience. And that's been my experience that AA works really well. On everything that life has to offer. You know, I was talking to someone the other day and they asked me a question and I had to think about it. And remember, when we answer questions and we talk about Big Book, we talk about steps, a lot of it's personal interpretation. They asked me, did I think AA was about alcohol? And I said, yeah, I do think it's about alcohol. I think it's about the relationship the alcoholic has with alcohol. But I do think it is, and I think sometimes it's easy to forget that and get into sober unmanageability or how manageable my life is or my thinking or all the other check the boxes that are important. But we sometimes forget the first half of the first step is we admitted we're powerless over alcohol. And when I think about it in simple terms, probably the most important aspect of my life today is I woke up today not drinking, but not wanting to take a drink of alcohol. And I don't want to forget that. And sometimes it's easy to forget in the everything else because my life is happening to me. But when I boil it back down, probably the most important aspect of my life is I woke up today sober. Not wanting to take a drink out of time. And I'm a daily drinker. I'm a morning drinker. I'm an oblivion drinker. And all the rest you could put in. And I've been free from alcohol for over 36 years. And it would be easy to say, well, okay, let me tell you all this other stuff and forget that. And there are voices in AA around the country that I hear sometimes says, oh, you don't have to talk about alcohol and AA anymore. Just talk about recovery. Get to the point. Well, when I came in and some of you, when you came in, the drunkologues were 50 minutes. And a lot of them were boring. Okay. We got antsy in our seat and finally they got to don't drink, go to meetings and pray. And we were a little bit happy. We got a little bit of it. But that's not to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, we should have a little qualification here, a little identification. I mean, what makes me an alcoholic? All the trouble I got into, I've been arrested 11 times, kicked out of the house, plumped out of college, on and on and on. But what makes me an alcoholic is I can stop drinking on my own. No problem. Never had any problem stopping drinking on my own. I just couldn't stop. That was the problem. And I tried really hard to stay stop. But I always drank again. And since this is a progressive illness, the longer my drinking went on, the worse it became. And the periods between drinking and not drinking were shorter until I became a daily and a morning drinker. I didn't start out that. The other problem is that I have an abnormal reaction in my body. Is once I put it in, one drink leads to two drinks, to three, to four, to five. Whatever yours is, mine was about 10 Heinekens and I was done. That means I passed out or I got locked up or something happened. I usually didn't drink a case of beer, like I've heard some people, or some people say they drank two fifths of vodka. I would have been throwing up all over the floor. Other people can do that. Heineken beer put me right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I have a progressive illness that always gets worse. It doesn't get better. And I look at my drinking career and yes, that's true. As time went on, this progressively got worse. And I reached a state that I think makes you, or at least softens you up for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the best state of mind that you can come into. And that's hopelessness. it's just the very best. You get here a little short of hopeless. Sometimes it's hard to keep you in your seat no matter what we do. Okay. Sometimes it calls for more drinking. It did for me. I came here in 1981. I stayed for 10 months. I liked Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have any complaints. The only reservation I had, and what it was a reservation, is I was too young and I still had some party left in me. And so I exercised that after 10 months. I stayed drunk for 5 years. Actually, it's 1981 to 1982 to 1983. It was 10 months. It wasn't 81. 81 was another bit of trouble. 82 to 83. And then, yes, just about 4.5 years later, I'm in AA because alcohol answered all my questions. Our book refers it to as the great persuader. It beat me into a state of reasonableness. And so I came back to, you know, I was really crippled by hangovers. I don't know about you, but when I look back, I was very, very crippled by hangovers. I mean, I've heard people say, "Now, yeah, I never had one." I'm like, I did. I'd go to bed at 3 a.m. in the morning or 4 a.m. in the morning. It would be hard to be successful in life, you know, waking up at 2 o'clock sick, you know, nursing the booze. And the interesting thing, when you talk about the illness of alcoholism or how sick it gets, is that you're always looking. Think about the time and energy you put in this. Other people are in college. Other people are getting married. They're raising kids. They've got a career. And I'm thinking, how can I eliminate my hangovers? I've put a lot of time and energy in. And so you ask people, and usually, and a lot of you heard this, drink a lot of water before you go to bed, you know? So I'm drinking water. Didn't do it. Eat a big meal. So I'd eat a big meal, didn't do it. Smoke some marijuana. Now, that was actually pretty good. It just put me in a state that I couldn't go to work. I couldn't go anyhow, but I wasn't going to go in that shape. So there was a lot of things that I heard that I tried to do, but it failed. But the one thing that worked, and this will end a career really quick, drink. I got that from you. Said, Al, the best medicine for the hangover, now think about this, the best medicine for a hangover is wake up drinking. And once you've thrown up a couple times and you've gotten it down, it really does work. But it's really hard to keep a relationship. It's really hard to go to work. It's really hard to get an education. It's really hard to enjoy life. I don't think that we were designed to do that. But as an alcoholic, I'm designed to end up that way. Alcohol did everything for me and to me that it needed to do to put me in the chairs of AA. I can't credit anything else because I came in here in a state of hopeless. Now, my story is a little unusual and probably more of a minority, is that when I look back at it, for all intensive purposes, I came in a state of surrender on May 5th, 1987. I had no resistance to what you were saying. In fact, I wanted to do it because the shape of my life was in. If you'd asked me to take the steps, which you did, I did. Oh, I have to tell you a story on this one too. It will coincide with this. We're such all or nothing people. Like I said, when I started, don't talk about drinking anymore. Just get to recovery. You know, we get so into the all or nothing. So we start throwing things out. 90 meetings in 90 days. That's bad. And we're like, yeah, that's bad. And so all of a sudden we start going after things. And we don't think that maybe that did help some people. It's certainly not the program of recovery. We're not replacing it. But one of the things I did when I came here is what people told me to do was go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I did it before I knew better. Nowadays, 90 meetings in 90 days. But what they told me about 90 meetings in 9 days is they said, Al, it'll take some effort. It's an introduction to AA, which it was. And they said, after 90 days, if you're not interested, we'll refund your misery for free. I mean, that's what I was told about. So I'm going to my 90 meetings in 90 days, and I have a workload. I'm working 14 hours a day, and I'm going to a meeting every day. I'm trying to fit it in either at lunch with my boss's approval or at night or in the morning. Sometimes I had to drive to D.C. on the weekend, and because Buckingham really only had one or two meetings a week. There wasn't a lot in the area, or if they were in the area, they were hard for me to get to because of the schedule. So I'd go up to D.C. and start meeting people. And in that 90 meetings in 90 days that I was going to, and I bumped into the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I bumped into sponsorship. I bumped into home group and have a job. I bumped into help other alcoholics. I bumped into God. I bumped into all because I was listening to you. Tell me, don't go to the same meetings, go to a lot of different meetings all over the place. And that's what I did. And it really started to give me the basis of what my recovery would be AA all over. And I started real young on that, Baltimore, and I drive DC, Southern Maryland, North Carolina. And I actually enjoyed it. I had fun and I did it by myself. And I would go to meetings and people say speaker tapes. I never heard of speaker tapes. And I'd get a speaker tape and I'd put it in there and, oh, wow, this is great. So I'd go into these long distance and I'd end up in Florida. So I always said that Orlando, Florida was my second home in AA when I first got sober because my brother lived there. And I'd listen to speaker tapes all the way to Florida and all the way back. And I didn't know I was molding my sobriety, that it would be bigger than Buckingham County. Because what happens in local AA or small communities, maybe like Madison, Buckingham, Farmville, when you have a small town, the local pharmacist gets sober, the local lawyer, the local somebody that has some promise, they get sober, and then they bring in their friend, and they get sober, and they have a bunch of people. And really what they do, and it's kind of a don't drink and go to meetings. You certainly wouldn't see the 12 concepts for world service. It'd be more of a don't drink and go to meeting. I don't have any problem with that. I think it does work to some people. Though we have a lot in common here, I've been here long enough that I don't think we all suffer from the same thing here. I don't. I've had too many conversations with too many people. There's a lot of similarities, but when we get down to some brass tacks, there are some differences. Now, some people say they're not alcoholics. They're hard drinkers. I don't know that because I don't have a blood test on. There's not a blood test that says, oh, they're an alcoholic. Take that. You're a hard drinker. Those are assumptions we make, sometimes out of our own prejudice, you know, that we'll make an assumption. That person didn't take the steps and they've been sober for 20 years. They're a hard drinker. I don't know that. I don't know if they're unhappy. I don't live with them. I can't make those judgments. I have, just like maybe some of you have, but I don't make those judgments much anymore because I don't know. You know, some people like me are very, very active. I need to be. I got a head that's very active. I need to be very active here. I plant myself in a very active AA community. And that's what I share. But AA is not limited to my experience. It's not limited to a guy that probably makes 10 meetings a week and 36 years sober. A lot of it's online. Some of it's live. That's what I have to do. You know, I don't require that from the guys I sponsor because I don't tell them what they need to do. I share with them what I do. And then it's up to them. Okay. I've learned a long time ago, you'll be a lot happier sponsoring people and working with them when you're not responsible for their sobriety. Come on. You forgot your fifth step. Come on. You said you were going to do it 4 months ago. You haven't done it yet. Well, we all had those conversations early on. We wanted them to be sober. More than they wanted to be sober. That was the problem, you know, and that was the conflict. And one day I realized the seventh chapter said working with others, not working on others. And I was like, oh, wow. These chapters are kind of important, what they say. Sometimes we go over them, you know, because we just. You ever seen the second chapter, there is a solution? It doesn't say solutions. It's singular and not plural. But as an alcoholic, I like solutions. Okay? Because solution doesn't sound as good as solutions. But solution works a lot better than solutions. And where do you find that out? By being an AA. Where else? This is your second language. You know, you learn English like I did, and maybe some people here. I know some people speak five languages. I speak one English, and it's not real good. But I learned a second language. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. You've got to be here for a while for the language to make sense. A lot of times we want to bring up the dictionary, okay? Did you look at that word? This is what it meant. 1938. Got to have it right. You know, this is kind of a remarkable book. Now, I've had a dictionary on it before, and maybe you have too. But we got words in there you don't need dictionaries. Pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. Boy, when I first heard that, that didn't sound real good. That's as far as I knew. Right? Conceded to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. Conceded? Oh, I think I got that. I started looking at different words in the big book, and I was like, fourth dimension of existence. Well, that sounds better than a hangover. That's all I needed to know. It sounded pretty good, didn't it? Here you are, you're sitting there, your life's a wreck, you crash and burn. I'm living in a fourth dimension of existence. Let me get the dictionary. What did a fourth dimension of existence? No, I didn't need the dictionary because I wasn't that smart yet. I needed to come in here. Fourth, that sounds really good. Better than 11 arrests, flunked out of college, lack of college degree, no money in bank, $28,000 in debt. Parents not talking to me, fourth dimension of existence. We were rocketed. Sounded good, didn't it? And you know what it's disguised of when we have all these words that we don't have to have definitions? It sounds like hope, right? And we need hope if you're hopeless, because that's kind of the antidote. You come here and you're like, oh man, they're never going to make this. This is it. I'm down for the count. And all of a sudden we come in here and we start connecting and identifying with here. And then all of a sudden, somewhere, there's some hope. If you can do it, I can do it. And when you have that, I say, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Come on in. It's when I hear you and I'm different. I'm different. I'm different. I'm different. I'm different. Where's the hope? I'm different. You're so different. What was your name? He's not there anymore. Oh, she. We got to find the similarities here. Okay. And that's what Silkworth told Bill. Obsession, physical allergy, progression, hopelessness, fatal nature of the malady. Right? We got to have some language here that we can kind of fall into and go, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or what we call the me too moment. Yeah, me too, me too, me too, me too. Yeah, yeah. When you started drinking, could you stop at one? Oh, wow, got it. When you convince yourself, promise yourself, put your hand on a stack of Bibles, told your boss, your wife, your mother, your father, your grandparents, I'm never going to drink again. Did you? Yeah. Because self-will doesn't stop me from drinking. And neither does self-help. I wish it did, because Barnes & Noble has got some really good books. You know, there's a lot of identification in it. Lots of it. Unfortunately, it's self-knowledge. And what we find out in AA, as it appears as we sit here and we become willing, it starts to appear as an action program. And instead of a self-help program, it becomes a God help and help others. And I just had this long conversation with the person that I sponsor that is really caught in themselves, and they're sober a long time, longer than I am. They live in about at least 10 states over. And they went on for too long, 40 minutes, about themselves. And they were trying this fellowship and that fellowship and doing this and reading that. And finally they finished and they asked the magic question, which I think every sponsee needs to, after they finished, here it is. What do you think? I mean, really, I've got some guys I sponsor. Not you, Billy. They go on and on and on and on and on. And 45 minutes later, they haven't asked me, what do you think? And I'm waiting in the conversation. Hey, what do you think? What do you think? So finally, she says, what do you think? I've been waiting. I said, you know what an antidote to here is of self-obsession? What? Service. And she said, I didn't think about that, but I think you're right. I said, do you have any commitments in the groups anymore? She said, no. I said, you got a lot of time to think about yourself. Yeah. I said, you'll realize that AA is not a self-help program. It's a God help and help others program. And in that realization, what happens with the self-centeredness that we suffer some, or the extreme self-obsessions, it disrupts it and reduces the themes of the self-centeredness and makes us all of a sudden think about you rather than ourselves. Instead of serving ourselves, we start serving others. And when we serve others, you know what happens? All that other stuff doesn't matter anymore. But when I'm not, and I'm focusing on me, this stuff really, really matters. It matters so much I want to share it with you for 45 minutes. In detail. How I woke up this morning. What I thought about all day. Which was yourself. I get it. I've been there, done it. And it feeds and it feeds. And when people that have been here for a while and start moving away from AA, that's what starts coming in for the real alcoholic. I'm not talking for anybody else, but the real alcoholic, what happens is the over-concentration on the self starts to become more obsessive. So one thing our book talks about is it's easy to let up on the program of action, okay? Now, highlight this, underline it, and put parentheses, the word easy. I used to read this thing for years. It's easy to let up on spiritual program, blah, 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 blah. Easy to, one day it dawned on me, easy. And what are the things that distract me from my recovery? There are things that are important. And that you should have as a result of being sober that you may have lost for being drunk. Kids, family, finances. If you're not married, dating. You should date. Some people, the gym. Okay, I'm going to quit smoking, give up the coffee, drop 50 pounds. I'm going to go to Gold's Gym. Well, now it's Planet Fitness. Going to pump some iron all day long. I remember bumping into this one lady when I used to go to Gold's Gym, and I asked her where she had been for the last couple of months. She said she'd gone to the gym. Unfortunately, a couple of years later, she's back in the treatment center. Not everybody that gets distracted and they gets drunk, I'll assure you that. Not at least physically drunk, but certainly emotionally. And it starts off on the goodest notes. We call them bulletproof excuses. Didn't make the meeting. Why? COVID. That's, now who can argue with that? You didn't make the meeting because of COVID. I can't argue with that. I get it. Your health's important. Hey, I haven't seen you lately at the home group. Where you, I've been with the wife and kids. I got sober for my responsibilities. Well, I hope you don't get drunk for them. But it does. It sounds good on paper, doesn't it? And, you know, I got sober from my responsibilities. I'm a responsible human being. And you should be. Have you seen Jill lately? No. She got off probation and got her license back. What happened to her? And, you know, it's a funny thing. And maybe not funny, maybe it's sad for some people. If you have a family man up there, I've been in a situation. That slowly but surely, what I do is I talk myself out of this. Because I don't have time for it anymore. Because life has become too important sober. And really what I'm saying, and this is what the conversation I ended with the person that I before the meeting, is that I've become too important. That my self-centeredness has really increased and I want to be more important. And in AA, what I need to do, I need to find an avenue to give. That's the antidote. And like I said, I'm a minority. When I came in here, I really believed in the summer of 1987, and I surrendered my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I told myself I want to be here and I want to give here. And at my length of sobriety, people go, have you lost your passion? No. Have you lost your enthusiasm? No. I love Alcoholics Anonymous more today than I ever have. Are you still active? I'm more active now than I've ever been because of the online participation. For me, I have to do this. For me. I'm not talking about anybody else. I have to do it for me. And I came to a realization lately of being 64 years old, been sober here a long time. I'm not going to last forever. Okay? Just not going to. That's the reality of being a human being. You're not going to last forever. Somebody asked me, said, you know, what's your purpose in life? And I said, I have one purpose now. I hope in a small way that I can leave Alcoholics Anonymous in better shape than what I found. In a small way. And I said, that's kind of my purpose now. To help as many alcoholics as I possibly can. I don't have to sponsor all of them. In fact, I don't want to sponsor all of them. Okay. I don't. But I want to help them. And because of the experience that I've had, the ups and downs, the crashing and burning, the unhappiness, all the above, I find myself uniquely useful to folks that have longer term sobriety that are in pinches and they've crashed and burned in their life, whether it's financially, emotionally, in relationships, divorces, unhappiness. I'm working with two people right now with longer term sobriety that are very, very unhappy. And they share with me, they go, I'm just very suicidal. I said, it goes with that type of stress. I said, you don't have to get your knickers in the twist. And it just goes with that much stress. I said, that's the voice of hopelessness in your head. And when you crash and burn like you do, the only way that you can rebuild your life is with God. There's no other way. You got to reinvent yourself, but you got to reinvent yourself with God. There's got to be a different surrender here. And then the alcoholic mind steps in. There's got to be a different surrender here. How do I do that? Surrender. And I said, I'll point you towards a step that most of us miss. I just went to a group in Florida in Tarpon Springs that I go to on a regular basis. It's called 3, 7, and 11. Okay? Right? Steps 3, 7, and 11, they do the prayers. I go to a Sunday morning meeting in Charlottesville that does steps 3, 7, and 11 and the Serenity Prayer, which I love too. And a lot of meetings I've been to online that are step meetings, they talk about steps 3, 7, and 11. Important steps, important prayers. But nobody talks about 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Can he now take from me the things that I have admitted objectionable? Can he now take them? Everyone? If I still cling to something I will not let go, can I ask God to help me be willing? Why don't you start there with your surrender? And they go, I didn't think of that. And I said, that's exactly why we talk to another alcoholic, because I don't think of it either till I talk to you. Okay. And I said, that's where you start. Now you can start in the third step prayer. You can start in the seventh step. You could do the 11th. 11th is to me, the powerhouse. But don't forget the sixth step. It's the beauty. And it's a realization to me, just like the other prayers in the big book, of letting go and letting God. How do you do that? They ask me. I go, now listen. Let go and let God. And they go, do what? Anything God wants to do. So here it is. God, I've made a mess out of myself. My life's a wreck run by me. Could you please step in and take over? I'll follow your directions, and I'll be willing to do what you want me to do. Period. Is that all there is to it? Nope. One last thing. Your will, not mine, be done. Right? And then they start scratching their head. Is that all there is to it? Yeah. And then check some boxes. Call your sponsor. Help out another alcoholic. Go to a meeting. Check the boxes. And you know what happens? No matter what your present circumstances are, you and a new man will live in a wonderful and new home. That's what it says. Something like that anyway. Close. This is powerful stuff, and it's not from the intellect. But I would like it to be, and so would you. Could I figure it out? Can I make AA an exact science by studying? And studying and studying, which I've done. I'm a student of the history of the big book. But I don't think so. I think it can be simpler. And I do it because I like it. Do I think you have to do it? Not necessarily. Sometimes we want to make AA an exact science. Like this equals this. Sometimes yes. But sometimes not. We say things like, God won't do for you what you can do for yourself. I say ask anyhow, because I don't always know what that is. So just ask. One thing is the grandiose thinking of the alcoholic, the all or nothing, slowly but surely has to be abandoned, where you start finding there's more gray areas. It's not all black and white, which I would like it to be. Don't get me wrong. I really like black and white thinking. Okay. I like power-driven argument too. I like what my one friend said. It got me to think about it. He said, who made this a basic text? I never thought about that. Yeah, because we all go, this is the basic text, this is the basic text, this is the basic text. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, this is a part of AA. It has some other elements to it. But we say things like that. I've said things like that. If it's not in the book, it's not AA. Well, that didn't come in 2001. And that didn't come in until 1955. Well, yeah, pass it on. AA comes in. Sometimes it sounds funny to hear yourself say it. But when he said, who made it a basic text? I got to start to giggle and go, I don't want you to say, this is the basic text. And then my friend said, who made it that way? Was that official? I need those things sometimes because they bring me down. They bring me down to earth. And sometimes I need to come back down. I was talking to somebody the other day. He said, you know, two of the hardest directions in the big book. And I thought, I know what that is. No, I didn't. But my mind thinks like that. You know, when you sponsor me, they go, I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to say it anyhow. No, they don't know what I'm going to say because I don't know what I'm going to say. So my friend said this. He said, these are two difficult things for an alcoholic. One is we relax, we take it easy, we don't struggle. I hadn't thought about that. Oh, when things are going well, that's easy. Right? We can all do that. That's a no-brainer. But how about when your mind's going 100 miles an hour? Relax, take it easy. You don't struggle. Oh, man. I'll need God's help on that one, right? How about this one? We absolutely insist upon enjoying life. Yeah. Again, when you've hit the lottery, we get it. You absolutely, yes. But you're going to come down because what goes up must come down. It's a law. I think it's a law of gravity, but it's also a spiritual. You know, oh my God, I won the lottery. This is, I absolutely insist. Well, my wife left, the kid's not doing well. My business went bankrupt. Absolutely insist upon enjoying life. Well, that, just like I had the conversation before, it starts with service. And as we got into that, of learning how to serve Alcoholics Anonymous instead of wanting AA to serve me, that's where you get de-seated here. Where so-and-so hadn't seen him for a while, he forgot to, or she forgot to serve Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I start serving myself, I get into trouble. I've been there. Believe me, I'm talking from experience. I've told people, or shared with them, if you'd like to have a talk outside the meeting on resentment and self-pity, come on over. Got a lot of experience. Now, one thing that I had to do here early on, and it was very troubling, and I find for a lot of alcoholics, not every alcoholic, it can be a challenging part of our lives, and that's finances. Okay. Sam, what time is it?
6:41.
Thank you, Dale. Right. I need that, see? Got to ask for help here. If you don't, you get in trouble. Finances can be very challenging. I'm not saying just for alcoholics, but in AA, I've come across a lot of people, short-term sobriety, long-term sobriety, middle sobriety. Money grows on trees. If I want it, I'm going to buy it. I can put in another loan, another payment. And I was $28,000 in debt, 4.5 years sober. A lot of it came in from the drinking. And I had to ask the person. And this is a very important aspect of AA. Now, again, I'm going to talk in simplicity. Okay. It's asking for help. And sometimes we just forget to do it. You know, because we're kind of self-driven people, if you will. Okay. I can go ahead. I'll get that. I don't need to ask them. I already know that. And the ego. So what helps you to ask for help is emotional turmoil. Not always, but sometimes. Help! Why didn't you ask that a year ago? I wasn't there. But when I get into emotional turmoil, internal conflict, another case of self-obsession, help! Can you help me? So I asked somebody to help me financially. $28,000 in debt, wasn't doing real good with money. Thank God I didn't have any credit cards. Would have got in more trouble. And I asked a person for help, and I started making financial amends. I started giving away money to get strapped. I started paying back money to people that I owed to. I thought I was giving away my money, and I didn't have to give it away anyhow because I wasn't making enough. I was deep in debt, and I was scared. And I started paying them back one by one by one. By the time I was 12 years sober, I had it all paid off. And financially, I've been lucky. I haven't been back in to any serious type of debt. nothing that I couldn't pay off in a month or two, other than a mortgage, and I paid that off earlier. Now, I only credit that to my relationship with Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the same breath, when I say that, I'm saying my relationship with God. I just don't separate the two. They're so very, because God invented AA for the alcoholic. He created it. So everything about, when we say we put AA first, in the same breath, we're saying the other thing too. Yeah. But I have to put my sobriety first. Now, the God that I've gotten to know here and love, I will say one thing. I have seen some people say, I put God first in my life. I haven't seen him anymore. So if I can say I put AA first in my life, I'm telling you the same thing. I'm putting God first in my life too. But I want to know where I'm at when I say that. And I got free from it. And I've talked to several people lately with longer-term sobriety that got themselves into credit card trouble. And got themselves into some financial problems. Don't go into stock markets. Bill Wilson said the quick money deals, the alcoholic likes, but there's consequences. I share with people that if you don't have the emotional nature or the discipline to be engaged in stock markets, which some people do and do quite well, stay out of it. Hire a manager that's experienced and doesn't have the emotional tie into your money. I know two people that have gone belly up in AA because they got involved in the markets. They made some good money for a little while. And you know what happens in the market? If you're not careful, fear and greed will start to take over. You have to be very careful. That's why years ago, I turned my 401k and simple IRAs all over to, and they handle it, and I don't have to worry about it one bit. Now, my brother, he's an MBA, he's a veterinarian, he's a brilliant person, he's an option trader, he's puts in puts and all these different things. I don't even understand them. My brother can make $25 a week, and he's happy. And he's never really lost much money. Me, I made 25 on that option. Tomorrow it's going to be 500. I'm not going there. And I have to understand myself in that. Okay? There are other people that can do just fine with that. It's not me. Okay? I've watched people get themselves into trouble. The quick money deals that Bill Wilson talked about. So, you know, my life in Alcoholics Anonymous by no means has been perfect. I have suffered and been crippled by my own character defect on many occasions. I have been dishonest in sobriety and justified it. I have been more resentful than you need to be for a lifetime. I've been full of fear where I've been paralyzed. And I've been so self-consumed that I haven't noticed it sometimes. It's just an ordinary way of life, you know? Guy, the other night at our home group, I asked him the question, million-dollar question. I said, how do you know if there's 100 forms of fear and self-delusion and self-pity, and there's 100 forms, you can't realize this. And we think that's just a figure of speech that Bill used to really show us that, you know, self is very consuming, all right? So my self-centeredness is not always obvious to me, okay? It's not. And as an alcoholic, sometimes I have a very profound self-centeredness, okay? I think some of it's just going through life. So I said to him, how do you know? He said, well, you talk to your sponsor. I said, well, the sponsor doesn't have all the leads on it, but can help. Well, an AA meeting. I said, sure. If I go to an AA meeting, sometimes it's like a mirror. It's sitting right in my face. I'm like, yeah, that guy was right or she was right. Man, that meeting was on target. I said, but you want the quickest way to know how self-centered you still are? Ask your wife. Or on the other side, ask your husband. Hey, come here. Let's have a chat. What's this about? How self-centered do you think I am? Oh, I thought you'd never ask. Well, here's the list. You know? But if they don't ask, our sponsors say, don't you say anything. So we don't. But it'd be nice sometime. Maybe I'll bring that up. Why don't we do it with each other? It'd be funny, wouldn't it? Or would it be? You better be thick-skinned so you don't walk out with a resentment. You know how the significant others are. They can get you to you better than anybody else. And I've seen that. And AA, I can sidestep you. Okay, we have a disagreement, sidestep. Okay? I don't live with you. Okay? The highway is a very easy place to drive if you don't have to go fast everywhere. Then you just watch them give you the finger as they go past you. Okay? All right? Workplace too, generally speaking, you don't have to say anything there. But at home, it's different. Okay? Because the closer you get to someone, the closer you get to their defects of character. Okay? It's just the way it is. That's why we say in AA, that's one of the difficult places to practice these principles in all of our affairs. You're correct. And maybe not for everybody, but for a lot of us. It can be a difficult place because we're close to each other, okay? And we've moved that close that we've bumped into each other's character defects. You know, the AA meeting's a very phenomenal place to go. And years ago, some of you remember this. At the start of the meeting, after they read how it works, traditions, promises, or whatever they read, there would be silence for a minute and somebody would say, who has a problem? We don't have that anymore because now we have the daily reflections. It's replaced who has a problem. They actually have a topic now. Who has a problem? Silence. Oh, and about 3 minutes later, I do. And they make it specific, usually resentment, fear, something didn't go their way, unhappy. And then the meeting goes to work. And this person answers, this person answers, this person answers, this person answers. Did an inventory, called my sponsor, made the coffee commitment, had a commitment, you know, try to help out another alcoholic, prayer and meditation. But here's what I said after a while. It's all the same subject matter. There's one problem, one solution. Remember, not plural, but singular. It's simpler that way. So if you go in an AA meeting, and how often have we heard that? I wasn't doing a four-step. I went to four straight meetings. They were talking about a four-step. Did you bring it up? No. Because it's all the same subject matter. Next time you have a problem that is bothering you, go in a meeting and just be still. Now, I'm not saying every time. If you want to share, go ahead. I'm not telling you what to do. See if the meeting doesn't answer the problem you have without you telling the group you have that problem. It's very interesting. That's why Bill said logic's great stuff. We love it. But this isn't logical. It's spiritual. It doesn't always make sense. That's why when we say A plus B equals C, yes, sometimes, but not all the time. Not all the time. If you pray, you better bring a hoe. I haven't always brought a hoe. I just prayed sometimes. I had some good stuff happen to me. Where was my hoe? I don't. Other times you need to bring the hoe. Get to work. It's not an all or nothing world here. It's not all black and white. There's gray. And I used to be the most black and white, ask Billy. Ask Lynn, maybe even Sam. Maybe Dale, if he remembers. Yes. flashing light. It's this way or the highway. Like there's a right and wrong. The right and wrong is in your experience. And what the traditions talk about is the trial and error experience here. That we go through the ups and downs in life. And the beautiful thing of AA is we don't have to do it alone. Remember trying to solve your problems by yourself? Trying to talk to yourself? Like the lady before I came in the meeting. She's talking to herself about her problems. A lot. Like for weeks. It's like, whoa. And you know what AA does? Makes it doable. And I was having this conversation with this person, and they finally came to a realization, never said nothing. And they asked me a question. Now, I don't take it personally if you're doing it, because we're not talking to you. We're talking about this person. They said, well, I'm in another fellowship doing an inventory, and I've got this going on, and I'm ready to go to a trauma workshop. And she says, after our conversation, I don't think all that's necessary, is it? I'm not going to give the answer. I said, the enemy of the best is often good. This stuff looks good on paper. And it looks like it fits. Okay? It really does. I mean, when you look at the symptoms of a psychological problem, the problem is the symptoms of the spiritual problem are the same. It's confusing. Look on page 52, the bedevilments. Most of us know that, right? Well, if you did clinical depression or anything else, aren't the symptoms the same? It's like, that's why AA has an in here. Now, when you get in, it's not logical anymore, okay? And the in here is this, okay? I'm going to make it really, really simple. We completely give ourselves to this simple program. No strings attached. No conditions anymore, no reservations, completely, okay? Either this works or it doesn't. And this person said to me, I think I'm going to give that stuff up and just focus in the AA. I said, why don't you try that? You tried that for a while, and you've been very self-obsessed, because sometimes for an alcoholic of my type, more is not what I need. Less is more. What do you say? I'll say it again. Less is more. I had one of my historian friends say that. I had this presentation. I had all these things like about 50 different sentences. He says, nobody can get all that. Less is more. Take them all out. So I ended up with 5. And see, if I do that, the same thing in my life, if I make this simple, and AA is a very simple process, it doesn't require intelligence. It requires action. And if I'll do these things, you know what happens? My life turns out better than I expected. Every time. No matter what this tells me. No, not going to do that. Nope. Got to be more. No. Here's what my sponsor says. Now, if you're not in AA, you're not going to like this answer. Or maybe if you're, scratch that. Here's his answer. Whatever problem I have, he has one answer. More Alcoholics Anonymous. The roof's falling in, more Alcoholics Anonymous. They're dying, more Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm unhappy, more Alcoholics Anonymous. Life sucks, more Alcoholics Anonymous. She's not behaving, more Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that all you know? Yeah. There hasn't been a time yet that hasn't worked. Now here, and I'll finish up with this. We're done. Here's the problem with those type of answers and like let go and let God, because we have expectations. And we also have a timeline. Well, 2 days have passed and it's not any better. That doesn't work. Right? We got this timeline of like, this person asked me, he said, I've been doing it for a week. I don't feel any better. I said, keep doing it. They said, well, and I'll leave you with this. Whatever you're going through, besides More Alcoholics Anonymous, stay the course. And AA works despite us. Thank you. Yeah.